Welcome to Today on Broadway for Wednesday, March 13th, 2024. I'm Broadway Radio's Matt Tamanini.
I'm Tell Me on a Sunday podcast, Grace Aki.
Grace, I think we might need to change that. When was the last time you put out an episode of Tell Me on a Sunday?
How dare you, Matt? I get to claim whatever I want. But no, I still love my podcast very much. And we've been talking about putting out new episodes. I don't know if you know this, but I've been being busy. but I have a couple in the can, which is upsetting. So I just have to release them. But I wonder if with all these new shows coming up, I should just like put out a crap ton of episodes and just be like, here you go.
Make it a binge drop. Go Netflix on us.
Oh, that would be smart. Just a whole season on one Sunday.
Yeah.
On an ordinary Sunday.
There you go. Very good. Very good. I like it. That would be a very good thing. I was going to say, maybe we could go to Broadway Insider, Grace Aki. I mean, that would work too, but.
Oh, God. I don't want anybody to think I'm disclosing info that I shouldn't be. But no, I think that's a good idea too.
Yeah. Right. Either way. All right. Let's dive into the news, Broadway Insider, Grace Aki, because yesterday we learned that the rumors that we had heard about and had actually talked about here on the show are in fact true. And the Broadway revival of Sweeney Todd will close up shop over at the L'Enfantin Theater at the end of Sutton Foster and Aaron Tveit's run in the show. That will happen on May 5th. At the time of its closing, the show will have played 426 performances on Broadway, 27 previews, 399 regular performances. Not bad. I mean, that's over a year on Broadway. That is a successful run for any show at this point, but you know, revivals don't often go past a year. So good for them for making it close to 14 months on Broadway. Of course, the show originated with Annalee Ashford and Josh Groban. It was always only doing 7 performances. So I wonder how that factored into the calculus, Grace, about what this show needed to do on a week-to-week basis to sustain itself. Obviously, production costs are going to be lower because you're not paying cast and crew as much, presumably. But there are also fixed costs that don't really depend on the number of performances. Do you have any insight on like what a production not doing a full 8 show per week schedule would do? Like, how much would that impact the financial equation it would need to stay profitable on a week-to-week basis and eventually recoup its initial investment?
You're essentially just factoring in the ticket loss of, what, over 1,000 seats into the regular ticket price for an ATP that matches something that can equate 8 shows. Because they've been operating as a blockbuster, it makes sense for them to have a higher ticket price than other Broadway shows, just acknowledging that they have 7 shows a week. But I think that it's worked out really well for them up until this point. I would love for the rest of Broadway shows to adopt a similar model, even though I know we're all hemorrhaging and wanting a show to last at least longer than the initial, like, you know, we're seeing things happen every day. We talked about 2 closures last week. So I know that we are not in a place financially to implement this across the board, but I think that moving forward, there has to be some level of split for people to have more than one day off a week. I think that it's just kind of gotten really challenging. And when you've got those 5 show holiday weekends or regular 5 show weekends, it's just a lot of shows and people are getting worn down a little bit. So I would hope that maybe this is something that we can adopt for other shows. Who knows? Because I would personally take like 2 shows on a Thursday just to have 2 days off. Like, I don't know. I think it changes for every person and performer and crew member. But I know a lot of people that have been a part of that show have said that it's a godsend to their schedules. They're able to do more for developing shows. They're able to spend more time with their families. Like, they've been very, very happy with the schedule. And it's obviously worked out for them to continue running and make a lot of money. So I hope that it's a case study. But again, they had really big blockbuster people in the show. They had exciting, sexy celebrity ticket vibe to it. So it's a little different. You know, you can't do that with every single show, but I think it's worth noting.
I've always been really torn on this issue, Grace, because I hear all of the performers talking about how grueling an 8 show week schedule is. And I completely understand that, especially in a musical when they're doing so much dancing, the ensemble is working their butts off. I totally understand that. But then I also think about the people who are buying tickets, and many of them work far more than 40 hours a week. Some of them work very physical jobs as well. So I'm torn on that when you're saying that they want to do fewer shows. Understand it completely on the side of, you know, workers not having schedules that are ridiculous. But it also makes it very difficult for me to say that you're going to take away a performance, because that limits the opportunities for people to see it. And then it limits the opportunities for people to pay to see the show. And then it makes it much harder for shows to sustain themselves. So I'm just always been torn on that. I would much, much rather see, like you said, keep the 8 show schedule, but find a way to do Mondays and Tuesdays off. Or I don't think there's ever going to be a situation where they do something, you know, an expanded version of what London does, where they don't have shows on Sunday. I think just from a weekend standpoint here in the United States, that there has to be shows on Sunday. So I completely agree that I would like to see them have opportunities to have more time off, not only for development and hanging out with their families, but just the physical aspects of needing to recuperate. But it seems a little bit of cutting your nose off to spite your face if it makes it harder for shows to sustain long runs. But like you said, because of the star power of that show, not just with Josh Groban and Annalee Ashford, obviously Gaten Matarazzo was in there at the beginning of the run as well. You had Jordan Fisher as well, and you now have Joe Locke in there. And of course, the great Ruthie Ann Miles has been there for the duration. But I don't know. I'm torn, but it was a really interesting experiment. The fact that they were able to sustain it for over a year is a positive, at least in a limited sample size like this one. All right, Grace, let's move across the pond and talk about the first big nominations of the theater awards season. And obviously these won't have anything to do with what happens in New York, but the Oliviers really do kick off the theatrical spring season in terms of awards. And yesterday we got all of the nominations, and unsurprisingly, Jamie Lloyd's revival of Sunset Boulevard led all shows with 11 nominations, including one for Best Revival. They picked up acting nominations in all 4 categories for Grace Hodgett-Young in the Best Supporting Actress category. Best Supporting Actor went to David Thaxton. Lead actor went to Tom Francis. And of course, leading actress is Nicole Scherzinger. The show also got nominations for Lloyd, for choreography, and for many of the design elements. Over on the play side, the National Theater's Dear England led those nominations with 9, including Best Play. Joseph Fiennes picked up 1 for leading actor in a play as well. There were a number of familiar names for Broadway audiences that picked up nominations, including Charlie Stemp picking up 1 for lead actor for Crazy for You, Cedric Neal for Guys and Dolls, and both Casey Levy and multiple-time Broadway radio guest Marisha Wallace picked up nominations for lead actress in a musical for Next to Normal and Guys and Dolls, respectively. SJP herself, Sarah Jessica Parker, received a nomination for lead actress in a play for her work in Plaza Suite. Some other, you know, pretty fun ones in there as well. The new Jez Butterworth play, The Hills of California, got multiple nominations, including 1 for Laura Connolly, who is a Broadway alum as well. Sarah Snook received a nomination for her one-person version of The Picture of Dorian Gray. Sophie Okonedo, Sheridan Smith, Mark Gatiss, James Norton, Andrew Scott, David Tennant. Just a lot of really great names in there that picked up nominations. If you want to take a look at all of the nominations for the 2024 Oliviers, you can do so in the show notes. But Grace, as you look through this list, we know that Sunset Boulevard is coming to Broadway. We believe that Guys and Dolls and Next to Normal will come to Broadway next season. At least I think so. Or maybe not. Guys and Dolls will come to New York. I'm not sure if that'll come to Broadway. But we think those are going to come over. But is there anything else on this list that you are especially excited? Oh, and Stranger Things, The First Shadow also got multiple nominations as well. We know that's coming to Broadway. Is there anything else on this list of nominees that you're like, I really want to see that come over to New York in one way or another? Is it Sarah Snook? Is it Dear England? Is it Operation Mincemeat? Hills of California? What are you thinking?
I think that Sarah Snook's show, Dorian Gray, I could see it selling super well, especially seeing how Enemy of the People is doing for Jeremy Strong. I think that there's a yearning to see some of these people from Succession on stage. I mean, they're all incredible stage actors themselves. Still waiting on my Kieran Culkin revival of literally anything. Please take your pick. I would love to see your face again on stage. But yeah, I think that that one is probably my most anticipated that we don't know for sure if it's coming. Obviously, people are excited about it, and there's a possibility of rumors. I know people have talked about Stranger Things potentially. This is so rumor. This is not inside anything, but they've talked about it reopening a theater that's currently in renovations. So I wouldn't be surprised if that actually happened. Yeah. So there's that rumor. There's also, I think that Mincemeat people have been tossing around the idea of it coming. I think that would be really cool if it did, just because the electricity of people that got really pumped were a particular fan base of people that love shows like Hadestown, even though they're not similar at all. But it's like the cross section of people that are in that younger demographic, maybe like millennial, geriatric millennials that are ticket buyers, but also just want something different, that aren't looking for a traditional musical. They're looking for something silly, avant-garde, campy, maybe. There's not a lot of options for those theater goers. And I think that this could potentially fill that void.
That would be great. Really looking forward to that. And I, as a geriatric millennial, I completely support that. All right, let's jump into last week's Broadway grosses. Overall, Broadway saw an increase of 5%. I'm guessing a little bit brought on by some new shows coming to the boards, although it is actually down by one show because of recent closings. But new shows popping up and the start of the spring break season, a little early spring break season coming in. Overall, Broadway grossed $24,545,774. Attendance was at 204,915 people. Average ticket price at $119.79. Overall, there were 12 of Broadway's 24 shows north of $1 million, and 18 of the 24 shows saw attendance over 90% of capacity. Wicked was at the number one spot on Broadway at $1,836,268. Hamilton was in second at 1.76. The Lion King was at 1.6. Merrily We Roll Along was at 1.56. And the aforementioned Sweeney Todd, even though it is closing at seven performances, still came in at $1.3 million last week. The rest of the shows in descending order north of seven figures were Moulin Rouge, MJ the Musical, Aladdin, Cursed Child, and Enemy of the People, doing incredible business over at Circle in the Square Theater. Then we had Hadestown and Anne Juliet. Chicago was the next one up at $978,473. That is a new non-holiday week record for the show, which has been running since 1997. You can certainly thank Vanderpump Rules alum Ariana Madix for that. As we talked about here recently, Grace, the casting for Chicago has really been hitting it on the head. They have done very, very well. The Who's Tommy joined the boards last week with two whole performances, but it did a really strong $345,129 over those two performances and did play to 100% capacity. So some interesting things in there, Grace. You mentioned Jeremy Strong and Enemy of the People. That's doing well. We've talked about the Chicago stuff. That's doing well. Tommy, pretty good for the first two performances. Obviously, there's a lot of people that are excited and often go to the first few previews of a show coming to Broadway, but that's a healthy number for the first two previews of a new production.
I agree. It's really exciting. I just got my invitation. I can't wait. I'm so curious what the reception is. I feel like I've not heard anything from people seeing it. I've just been seeing some of the media that's come out of the first preview and things like that. So I'm really curious how people feel about it. I feel like currently what's happening is like one of two things from Chicago, from my understanding, is like the first group of people that love Tommy just love Tommy. So they're just going to love Tommy, right? And then people that have no idea what it is might not know what to do with it. And so I'm curious to see the crossover of people that have never heard of it, if they are liking it, you know, and if it converts them into being Who fans or Tommy fans. I'm just really curious because I'm a huge Who fan. I am. I am a big The Who fan. I do not know Tommy well because the first time I ever saw it, I was scared.
The movie's freaky as hell. I will give you that. I'm interested, Grace, because I feel like this is a generation younger than like the first set of jukebox musical. And this is not the same thing as a jukebox musical like Jersey Boys or Beautiful or even A Beautiful Noise that's currently running, because this was a concept album that was then turned into a movie that was then turned into a musical. So it's a different thing. But when it comes from shows that feature songs from rockers, I feel like, and I could be wrong just in terms of the timing, but I think of The Who as being more of a 70s and maybe, you know, bleeding over into the 60s band than like the Four Seasons or stuff like that. So I feel like this might have a little bit younger target demographic. And the fact that it is much more of a rock show than something like those other ones that I just talked about, which are a little bit more pop infused. I do wonder if this is speaking to a different audience of non-traditional Broadway fans than maybe the other bio musical jukebox musicals that we've seen in the past. So I'll be interested to see if this plays a little differently than something like A Beautiful Noise that is getting ready to close up in June, where on paper it's, you know, quote unquote, rock songs from popular music from vaguely similar eras, but a little bit different time period and a much different feel in terms of, you know, kind of the genre of rock music that they bring to the stage. All right, let's move on to some other quick show and casting news and some other stuff as well. Yesterday, it was announced that the playwright turned producer Jeremy O. Harris, along with Josh Godfrey, will produce an invitation-only presentation of the new Will Arbery play, You Hateful Things. It'll take place on Thursday, March 14th. It'll be directed by Simon Stone and has a phenomenal cast, led by Christian Slater. Christian Slater will appear alongside Dear Evan Hansen film star Amanda Stenberg, Jakeem Powell, John Cameron Mitchell, Lucas Hedges, and Mahala. The press note said, "Dad keeps all his weirdness in a big box, and today we're opening it." I'm often very split on Will Arbery shows, Heroes of the Fourth Turning being the most recent one, a Pulitzer Prize finalist, but that's an incredible cast, and I would love to be in that room, Grace. Christian Slater doing a play. I feel like he's been circling Broadway stuff for a long time, but would love to get him in a show on a New York stage soon.
Listen, he went to go see SpongeBob, and that's important.
It is. It's very, very important. True story. I was once in a bachelor fantasy league with him, but just throwing that out there. Anyway, some real quick news from the administrative side of the New York theater scene. Yesterday, the artistic director from the Signature Theater, Paige Evans, announced that she would step down from her role this June, making it the latest leadership change in New York City not-for-profit theaters. She has been in charge of the Off-Broadway Theater Company since 2016. She succeeded then the company founder, James Houghton, but no replacement has been announced for Evans at this point. All right, Grace, let's dive into some feel-good recommendations. I have three. The first one, well, let's do it in this order. I'm going to finish with one that's a little bit more outside the box, but something that I have a feeling you might want to talk about. But first, as I mentioned on yesterday's show, the cast of Water for Elephants performed on Good Morning America. They did the song The Lion Has Got No Teeth, so check that one out. Then we also have, it feels like we're getting a lot of music videos from Broadway shows lately. We have a music video from the upcoming Broadway production of The Great Gatsby. It features Jeremy Jordan and Eva Noblezada looking just absolutely fab, going around some very fancy house, doing the song For Her, My Green Light. And then the last one that I'm going to talk about comes to us from The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, where Little Shop of Horrors star Evan Rachel Wood sang Miley Cyrus' song Flowers in the Audrey accent, which was very fun. I don't know if you've seen this yet, Grace, but I know how much you love Evan. And that was very cool. I liked it. I always think of her as being so cold and, pardon the pun, robotic, because of like the thing that I most associate her with was Westworld. And then to see her be like, oh, wait, that's right, she was acting. To see her be like this fun, goofy person doing something like this is a lot of fun and kind of cool to remember that actors are people, too.
That is the thing. She is an actor. And I oh, I love her so much. I think it's really cool that they're getting her out to I want to see her so bad. I hope I get to see her before she leaves, but if not, I'm excited for all of the things that they're putting her out there for. And that's the thing. I can put a list of the films you have to watch for her filmography in order to really engulf yourself in the full Evan Rachel Wood experience. So let me know. 13 being first, Pretty Persuasion is next. She's so fabulous and strange. And I'm obsessed with her. So good for you.
All right, everybody, that's all that we have for today. Thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Broadway Radio. You can follow me pretty much anywhere at BWWMatt. Grace, where can people find you?
You can find me at It's Grace Hockey.
All right, everybody, have a wonderful Wednesday, and we'll be back to talk to you tomorrow.